Hey guys, episode 64 of Russell Folks the Podcast. My name's Thomas Green. You can find me on Twitter at NotThatTomGreen. This week, the return of one of my favorite people on the planet, one of my closest friends, one of my closest allies, Kevin Marshall, returns to the podcast. And we'll talk about why he hasn't been around in a while. Well, I'll talk about it now, actually. Long story short, about a year or so ago, he got hired by the biggest sports entertainment company in the world, WWE, to join their writing team. So he's one of the dreaded ex-writers who are doing all these podcasts now. And we'll talk all about his experience there. I also want to mention our sponsor, Top Rope Tuesday, very best in professional wrestling alternative apparel. Every week, a new t-shirt of awesome design drops for a very, very low price. TopRopeTuesday.com. Now you go buy a t-shirt, you sit back, make sure the earbuds are staying in. This is a great episode with Kevin Marshall. He is one of the finest gentlemen I know. I cannot praise him enough. My favorite story about Kevin is I was in New York a few months ago and we went out for dinner with some other people. And he went around the table shaking everyone else's hands. And it was a table full of people he had never met before. He went around the table shaking everyone else's hands. I put mine out and he goes, "Nope, put that hand away. We're hugging." And right there I knew he's a good dude. At least he's on my team. So I'm forever loyal to Kevin Marshall. Hey, I can tell you all the stories in the world about how great Kevin is and how much I love him, but I'm going to go into this donut shop and buy some donuts. You go listen to the Road Dog tell you how great Kevin Marshall is.
Omaha! You damn right! You see, it's me! It's me! It's that D-O-double-G! Marvin once again with that B-A-double-D, A-double-crooked letter! Now then, in the immortal words of Kevin Marshall, here's the deal! We're about to defend our titles inside a cage of steel!
I didn't see you there, listener.
Oh, yeah, we've been like talking for a half hour. I didn't realize the record button was clicked. So this is awkward.
Oh wow! Oh, how embarrassing for us! How off you caught us with our podcasting pants down, folks.
Literally, the microphone stand was not all the way put up. This is so embarrassing.
God, this is like. I feel like they just kicked into the room while we were making love. It's an analogy, right?
Yeah, it's the perfect analogy in this day and age.
Yeah, no, they're the war machine to our Christine Mack and MMA boyfriend.
Ooh, current events.
Oh, God. God, thank God that guy's behind bars. What a monster.
That prison is the perfect place for a human being like that. Perfect.
Actually, anywhere but free society is the perfect place for a human being like that. There's not many people who I would say, like, the world is better off if he just doesn't exist. But, man, that guy is just unremorseful, deluded. He's obviously, you know, he's got a lot of illnesses going on. You know what I mean? Like, let's not kid ourselves. Like, it's not all, like, just a matter of, you know, he's pure evil. But, god damn, like, he just shouldn't be around human beings without somebody holding a weapon near him.
By the way, I don't know if you read, but Chuck Zito is defending him.
Oh, Zito, because he's always been a cool guy. You know, he's got a cool background. There's nothing questionable about what he's ever done. And I always felt like he was kind of like, you know, a voice of reason in a world where, you know, society is always good and generous. So good for him. I'm sure he's not Republican at all either, right?
No.
Can you hear that, America? That's my Soda Stream.
I believe the exact quote was, if my woman cheated on me, I'd beat the shit out of her, too. So that's a thing. Somebody
you're on again. You're on again, off again, porn star woman. Yeah. God, actually, no. It doesn't matter. I mean, I say that, but it really just does not matter.
So, Kevin,
you're a scumbag. It's Chuck Beagle listening to this. Zito, you're a scumbag.
Oh, I know. He's a subscriber on iTunes. He wrote a review. Really nice review, actually. 5-star review. So yeah. I really don't want to trash him too much because he's a devout listener.
You don't want to trash him. But, well, he won't hear this because he doesn't listen to this, but he does listen to everywhere.
He was on the cuss list like 3 weeks ago, but I couldn't cuss him because he was so nice.
I thought for a second he said the guest list, which, like, Chuck Zito on an episode of Everywhere You... He would just be the defending Uncle Jesse at every turn. Be like, this guy's got the right ideas.
No, like, every time we'd have a critique, he'd be like, no, that makes sense. Like, that's it. He doesn't even cuss. He's just, no, this is a really good show, guys.
Yeah. I tell those kids even dirtier stories.
Oh, goodness. So Kevin, listen, you were at one point... So you were at one point a monthly guest on the show, and we chatted about all sorts of things. And then 1 month I log into Skype and you're just not there. And then 10 months later, where have you been?
I you walked in the room and I left you a note that said, the dogs are tied up out back. Sorry. Oh, I'm in a dark place tonight. I'm sorry. That was a reference that you should ignore. Anyway, I was a writer for WWE.
Oh my goodness. Wait, I just logged onto Facebook and it says it there. Who would have known?
Yeah. It's there. It is there now. I didn't have it up a while. I think I might have had it up for like friends on Facebook that were in a certain filter that I worked there. But like for the most part, I never acknowledged in public that I worked there. It was like, I have friends literally that work for the CIA that weren't as secretive about their job as I was. Of course, then Road Dogg blew my cover on national television. And I had texts of people saying, why is Road Dogg saying your name on the air? Like, I was like, immediately, I was like, oh, okay. But not that I thought, you know, it was great. It was a really cool thing. My brother, who is also a lifelong wrestling fan, was watching live that night. He like very rarely watches live just because like, you know, he has two children and a wife. But yeah, even he was like, that's the coolest thing ever. And he was like freaking out over it. So that was really, really cool. Most of my, you know, I won't go into specific memories of working there just because like, you know, I have some people that are still there that I care a lot about. And I'm not going to be one of those guys that like tells stories out of shop. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be a guy, some people know who lies about how much time he spent there and or other television shows or even writing for them. But I will say that, you know, there are some people that are still there that I miss very much, that I think there's some great guys there. I take back anything bad I've ever said about any writing team ever, especially them. You know, it really was eye-opening into like how much talent there was in that room and still remains in that room, and like how great those guys are and what they have to, and especially considering what they have to work with. And by that I mean, you know, I think we know there's an editing process that's really whacked out, but you know, if any of them are listening or whatever listens, it's like, you know, I miss you most of all, Scarecrow. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was the other people in that room, and that includes, you know, occasionally, you know, we would have some of the producers we would interact with, and Road Dogg was always like a very valuable asset to us and was very like one of those guys that like truly got all of the work that goes behind it in and out of the ring and in various levels, like just a joy to be around and just like such a great resource and such a good mind for the business, and just like one of the genuinely sweetest guys you'd ever meet. I miss the dog, and I miss being there. But onwards and upwards, you know, whatever.
Well, I don't think it's speaking too much out of school, but I think the most adorable part of your time with WWE was every Friday when you would retweet something from Road Dogg being like, okay, Kevin and this guy, let's go.
Yeah, he would, you know, he would be in the room with us once in a while, just, and he just gets it. He gets like everything that goes into it. And I don't mean that in a way that to disparage a specific group of people. I think that in every corner of a large corporation or outfit like that, and this isn't limited to wrestling, you know, when you work in one area, you don't know or appreciate what another area does. If you work like in the social media realm, you don't appreciate what marketing does. When you work in marketing, you don't appreciate what HR does, and this and that, blah, blah, blah. You know, and Road Dogg is one of those few people that you meet that always has, you know, this awareness that, like, you know, this is a team and it extends beyond one room or one arena or whatever. It's like, it does take a cast of thousands, literally, to put this stuff together. And, you know, the corporate world, I think, as a whole, needs more people and human beings like that because, one, it makes it easier to be in that environment. To at least know that there's somebody else in another room that's like, that can be almost your voice in a way, or at least understand your process. But just in general, I think that's like the sort of thing that makes the company more successful. Like, you know, when you have more awareness that there are all these parts and mechanisms that go into creating this whole 24/7 storytelling atmosphere, which is what WWE is, it makes a company more successful. So, you know, professionally, it's a great thing that I wish more companies would do, but, you know, we are what we are. We is what we is.
Now, do you, because if I were you, I would. Do you consider yourself, like, the next generation of Armstrong?
No, because I would never put myself in such fine, awesome company, and I mean that sincerely, because Scott as well was a very sweet guy. Who I thought was great. And the whole family's awesome. And I was always, and it's cool for me too, because, man, like, honest to God, and I think we've talked about it, like, in the past, of, you know, I was a big fan of, like, WCW Saturday Night and the Lower to Midcard guys. Like, I was a huge Brad Armstrong fan. And I would be one of those guys who would always be shaking his fist, like, why isn't this guy, you know, doing more? And, like, you know, I always loved the New Age Outlaw shtick, and I loved the Road Dogg. I always thought he was, like, a much better worker than he gave himself credit for. Same with Scott. You know what I mean? I thought Scott was great. All those guys, you know, well, Bob was awesome. Like, you watch his stuff now, and it, like, holds up so well. Entire family, just, like, great workers. I would never put myself up on that pedestal. I'm more of, like, a freaking like a Chad Fortune, I guess. I don't know.
Chad Fortune. That's a guy. I know we can't really talk about a lot that happened in the room, but I've had you pitched for him many times.
I would always be like, old school Raw came up. They were like, what would you do for old school Raw? And I just said Chad Fortune before they could even finish. I'd reunite Chad Fortune and Eric Watt. I'd bring back Techno King 2000, Techno King 2014. That was my pitch for the entire theme of that night. But lo and behold,
that would have been like fantastic. Like, they would have, yeah, they would have been the guys who brought all the old guys in. That would have been fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so
Chad Fortune, I should put out there too, Chad Fortune is like a name of a jobber I thought of. Like, I don't remember anything he did, so he might have been I apologize if he was a great worker. I don't know. I honestly don't remember. I just remember Techno Team 2000 just not being great.
I remember he was really, 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 really tall. Like, him and Eric Watts were like normal. They were like normal people, but like the volume turned up to like 10. Or, like, they were, like, all in proportion for a normal person, but they were, like, 7 feet tall. It was crazy.
Yeah, well, that's, like, somebody just recently, and actually, it was today, and that's probably, I just realized why they didn't pop in my head. They posted a picture in the YouTube video of the WCW Pit Crew, that really, really very short-lived team, as in, like, the YouTube video they have is the only time they ever appeared on TV. And it was Chad Fortune and Neil Thorburg just, like, in jumpsuits, like, you know, that you would see on the racetrack, that just said WCW Pit Crew. And they were both like, and I was reminded of, like, wow, like how awesome Dale Thorburg was, because he was like as tall as Chad Fortune, if not like a tiny bit taller, and he was throwing like the most beautiful drop kicks you'll ever see. And I'm like, that's frightening.
Well, that was what the power plant was great for, were like really huge guys who threw great drop kicks. Mark Jindrak, Sean O'Hare.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
You know, yep. Sarge, he made you do squats so that you can jump very, very high to kick someone in the face.
Yeah. He's like, your vertical leap's going to be, you know, great when you're done here. It's like, what does that work in a match? He's like, that's priority D. No. First you learn how to jump, and then you throw a drop kick, and then you sneer, and then you'll learn how to.
So back to the whole you getting a job with the biggest sports entertainment company in the world thing. Like, how does that, like, come about, like, from step A to stepping into the building?
I applied, and I interviewed well, and I was smart, and I got it.
So there you go.
I don't have a speaker for you people other than to have experience. Here's two things that helped me. One is I had experience writing for TV, you know, and being like a multi-platform writer too, because initially when they hired me, the job description actually read as if I was going to be more a part of the digital team than the creative team. And so I had all this experience on my resume, all this professional experience. Like, you know, you can't just be a big, huge fan. And then I guess I did interview well because I got the job, and it was almost weird because I didn't realize I was an actual part of the creative team until almost my first day there. And when it was like clarified to me, no, you're going to be part of the creative team. You're going to be considered part of the creative team more than digital. It's like, okay, cool. Because the way it was described to me, and the way it was communicated, was more of like, oh, you're kind of almost like I was going to float between the two teams. But really what it was is I was part of creative and I was the liaison digital. And then while I was there, honestly, it just completely shifted to like I was just, you know, one of the writers. And that was more of my the expertise that they were leaning on me for. Like they would come to me for digital questions, you know what I mean? But like it was, you know, I was doing this. Everybody does everybody's job. It's like one of those things. So it's So I ended up being just part of the creative team, and it was a weird ride for over 9 months.
And then at one point you shifted to being Keith Slater, and then you were the cotton candy guy. And
yeah, wait a minute. I was a member of 3MB shortly. No, that's not true. No. I wish.
They're the greatest tandem in the history of sports entertainment. Stellar win loss record, great abs.
Yeah, they were honestly they were I only worked with them once very briefly, but they were a joy. Like all three of those guys, seriously, they were great. They were so much fun.
Okay, so here's a question I'll throw out real quick. Honestly, if it is out of school, I will click delete. Did you ever meet Michael Hayes? And if so, what was he wearing?
I regularly saw Michael, and every time I saw him, he was wearing what I can only describe as something fantastic and wonderful. Michael was great to be around, honestly. What a, there is no gimmick there. That is him. Like, what you imagine Michael Hayes to act like if you've never met the man or seen the man outside of professional wrestling, that's him. There's no character of Michael P.F. Hayes. He's just, that's him. And that guy was always great to me. I always got along with him great. And he is just sincerely, I think, one of the greatest minds for that business ever. Like, he is, at what he does, he is brilliant, and he does a lot, you know what I mean? But yeah, like I would just listen to him talk about, like, you know, a match or, you know, promoting or whatever, and it was really just like I had to do everything not to have like my palms on my chin just like staring at him in wonder. Such a great wrestling mind, Michael Hayes. This one time he walked in the room wearing a lime green suit with a long coat, and it was, my God, I wanted to jump up and high-five him. What an awesome dresser.
You have no idea how happy you made me with that last sentence. Like, when I was talking to my buddy Brian Mann, who was on the team a few years ago, like that was my like first question for him, was what was Michael Hayes wearing the first time you met him? Because like the highlight of WrestleMania weekend to me is not any of the matches. It's not the Hall of Fame. It's what Michael Hayes shows up to the Hall of Fame wearing.
Yeah.
Because it's like the best thing.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. And that's just like, that's just how he dresses all the time. I can't tell you like what he was wearing the first time I met him, because every time I see him wearing something else, it tops it, you know? And he wears it well, man. Like, it should look, I don't know what it is about that guy. It's like on any other human being, it would be like, he would look ridiculous, but on him, it's like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, there are just those people who have the craziest closets, but they're allowed to have the craziest closets because they're there.
Yeah.
Like, if Michael Hayes dressed like my dad, I'd check out. That's bull crap. Whereas
right.
Michael Hayes dressing like the Technicolor Dreamboat, of course I'm in. I'm all in. You know, I'd love to just follow that dude around with the camera and then be like, hey, Michael, just talk. Just live life.
Honestly. No, seriously, like one of the great joys of that job is just even once in a while getting to hear him talk about shit. Just like talk about business and even share like his, you know, personal, like professional advice or just like, you know, relate an act to him. Just amazing. And it really, you know what it is? It really is like, he's just got such a big personality. I think that like, I don't think he could dress any other way. It would just seem, you would just almost like stare at him and be like, this guy needs more louder clothing. Because I'm just, he would disappear otherwise.
So like, along that, because now I'm thinking of like more like nerdy, I almost said sexually non-threatening questions, which is kind of a weird way to put it. Like, for instance, did you ever...
Oh, no, there's nothing weird about that. Sexually non-threatening, there's nothing weird about that at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Michael Hayes is the opposite of sexually non-threatening. Michael Hayes would take my wife from me in an instant. I'd be like, okay, cool. I understand.
I get it.
Yeah. For instance, did you ever walk by the gym with the giant, the lights from the Ico Pro commercial? That's...
I did walk by the gym. I never went in there. And I have the body to show for it.
I
did put on a little bit of weight while I worked there, unfortunately.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't... you look like a good 330 pounds of muscle. Like, you... like, I'm surprised you didn't get sent down to Orlando at some point.
Who says I'm not there now? I could be working everybody, and, like, me and CM Punk are just going to show up on Raw one night.
Who's the guy with CM Punk? Oh, just his bodybuilder friend. Like when Roddy Piper.
No, they're like that's one of, they would say that, like, but that's one of the behind the scenes guys formerly, and that's a shoot, they would ask so that people would know this is shooting. And I would say with the microphone, I'm shooting. This is a shoot, brother.
Would you mention that you used to write the words and now you're saying the words, brother? Just to let everybody know that all the promos are fake.
Yeah, and it'll be like an outcomes are predetermined, brother. I'm so glad. I am glad I worked there in an era where like the whole like worksheet thing was no longer a thing and hasn't been for many years. My God, like that still drives me nuts when like I see even like indie promotions doing that where they're like, "Is she shooting?" Because it's like the moment you do that, it's like, "Oh, thanks for completely taking me out of this escapist fantasy that I've so desperately clung to for all these years." It's like watching Game of Thrones and just like the Mother of Dragons just takes off her wig and starts kissing Seth MacFarlane. Like, this is not, I no longer enjoy this show. This is not interesting to me at all.
That being said, this isn't a job related question. I just wanted to say Vince Russo's name real quick. So that he can then search this.
Vince Russo no longer works for TNA, but Razor Fist is the head writer.
Razor Fist. Oh my goodness.
Like, Razor Fist.
Like, I think I sent you the link to his blog the day it came out because I needed to let everyone I loved see that. Because it's so good. It's so good in, like, the Vince Russo way.
Oh, somebody I know calls him the gift that keeps on giving, and I cannot agree anymore with that. He was just, he's, like, his whole thing is just, like, it just blows my mind. Like, he was doing a thing with Ed Ferrara, where he's talking about how smart Ed Ferrara is. And Ed Ferrara just talks about writing specs. And he's like, yeah, I've reverse engineered a script. And like,
Vince slaps the table.
He slaps the table and says, see, there you go. You use bricks, reverse engineering. I have no idea what that means. That's why I'm always saying, you're so smart, Ed.
And then Ferrara's response. Oh my goodness. To Russo's face. Words on paper. Words look pretty. Give words back. Fire burn. Like, to the man's damn face. I kind of adore Ed Ferrara just for that. Like, I don't care if he wrote Weird Science, a TV show, or if he had dreadlocks for a while. That was kind of weird. For that moment, he's... No offense, Kevin. He's my second favorite ex-WWE writer.
Your first favorite being Court Bauer. Court Bauer.
Yes, of course.
That guy.
That guy.
Let me tell you something. That's the guy that gets it.
Oh, he's he's down with everything that's trending and what's another buzzword. He knows all the buzzwords.
He created a show for HBO, didn't he? Court Bauer?
Yeah, I think he
wrote the last season finale of Arliss. I didn't know that much.
Yeah, he if it wasn't for him, they wouldn't have put the dollar signs on an Arliss's name.
On Arliss, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was also his nom de plume, if you will, is David Simon. And his work as David Simon is incredible.
Oh, did you know that Court Bauer invented pay-per-view? Like, just in, third grade, he was like, listen, everybody, $5, come over to my house, we'll watch a wrestling match. And then, boom, WrestleMania, boxing, Woodstock 94.
His was the first wrestling podcast, too, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's not 1994. He podcasted on Prodigy.
Yeah.
Him and Matt Hardy. I don't know why I said Matt Hardy. That's
a more genuine, knowledgeable human being you will not find.
No, it's not like he doesn't lie. That's the craziest thing. Like most of you, gosh darn X writers, you lie all the time.
Like, yeah,
about
not
all
him.
All your work. No, not him.
He's what we in the business call a straight shooter, and
he's not working. I mean, he's not working. He's shooting.
He's shooting all the time, and he's not working anybody. Certainly not his listeners.
No, you know he's shooting because you can hear the finger gun just off mic, and by off mic I mean just off to the side of his screen of his computer, because he's not gonna filter his voice through a microphone. He wants you to hear the ambiance, so that you hear the full tones, the dulcet tones of his voice, brother.
He does have dulcet tones, I will say that. He's got a good radio voice.
Yes, he is the reason why New Japan is so successful in 2014.
The Shinsuke Nakahua is what people would be saying.
Exactly. No Kata, it's Court Bauer. So passive aggression aside. Okay, so...
I was being 100% genuine. I don't know about you. Whatever.
Well, I was being passive aggressive towards Okada. I mean, have you seen that jerk? Come on. Him and his hair.
Wait, towards who?
Yeah.
Towards who?
Yeah.
Towards who? No, I'm serious. I didn't hear it.
Yeah. What?
No, I'm serious. I didn't hear who you were saying.
But Okada.
Oh, yeah. Okada.
Okada's
just
him and his hair.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Rainmaker. More like rain delay. Am I right?
Yeah.
Let's get this moving.
He could be fixing this whole thing in Missouri by himself if he just threw money. Over it.
Man.
So not to bring the mood down, I do have a serious question. Since everyone's going to be looking up ex-WWE writer, and they're going to be like, oh, scandal, gossip, problem fixing. So your time there, when you came in versus when you left, expectations versus reality, kind of the scene from 500 Days of Summer, you know, the expectations on one side, the reality on the other side, that scene, but for you and this job, Mm-hmm. What did you expect, and what did you get?
Again, I didn't expect to be part of the actual creative team, so, you know. I don't know, it's a weird question to answer. I didn't expect to enjoy my time in and around that world as much as I did. I went in with a much more cynical, and maybe that was me just trying to temper my own expectations, but I went in there with a much more cynical view of what it would be like and what would happen in there. And I came out eyes wide open. You know what I mean? It was like it was a much better experience than I thought it would be. That being said, I'm very happy to not have to sit through 3 hours of Raw. that is a long goddamn time to be sitting down watching wrestling as a fan or otherwise, especially when it's like part of an extended work day.
Yeah, you would.
You can't even imagine.
Yeah, I mean, again, not to go too far into shop, but it seemed like you were pretty much always at work from like Sunday at a certain time until like Wednesday. And it's always like, oh, yeah. We have a show. Oh, when's it on tonight?
Yeah. Oh, we have another show. When's it on? In a few hours.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd IM you about something silly, and then you'd be like, oh, I have to go to bed. I have to start running a show in 6 hours.
Yeah, and it certainly wasn't just me. It was just like more of work, and a lot of that was just the commute, because I stayed in, I still am in Manhattan, you know, and it was an hour and a half commute each way. That ate up a lot of time, but it was also too, like that whole stretch of like, especially when it was a pay-per-view, like Sunday to Tuesday into Wednesday would always be like, whew, like it'd be a slog, but it was always great, you know, it was always cool. It's certainly a demanding job.
Which that was my one fear, is that the job would not that the job would like kill you, but as your friend, I was worried you'd come out and be like, again, one of those bitter ex writers. It's like, ugh, I hate everything.
No. It made me a monster. Yeah, no. It made me a monster. It made me very abusive towards other people in my life, and I still am, and I'm only getting worse. So it did destroy me as a human being. I am what you would now call a garbage person.
Yes, you are a garbage person. Which, and I appreciate Jake Fogelness for letting me steal that and say it at every show I ever do. Like, I've called
actually,
my...
No.
Oh, go ahead.
I know he says that he did that, but I'm actually the one that invented that phrase, garbage person. I also invented the joke, if Banksy were a dog, you know, Banksy the street artist, he would be called Barksy. That's my joke.
See, my proudest...
And he stole it from me. He's like the Carlos Mencia of Twitter. There's another reference that I was the first one to make in terms of stealing jokes.
Oh, I remember back in the, like, 6 months before the video broke, you converted him on stage.
I did. I put him against the wall, and I said, stop stealing my jokes about being a Latino. Because I had a whole bit about, you know, my Latino upbringing, which part of the joke was that I didn't have it, you know? But yeah, let's not get into that. People stealing my jokes.
Yeah, no. Though if you see Kevin walking down the street and yell Ned, he will turn his head. So
I will turn my head because my real name is Ned Holmes.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
That's not even true. I don't know. Who's the bad guy between him and Rogan?
In a way, I kind of. Like, what if Rogan was like, listen, what if Ultimate Fighter didn't work for the UFC? And they had one big thing they had to do, stay out of business. And it's like, Joe Rogan's like, hey, I'll fight Carlos Mencia. Like, and I'll even do it semi-main so it doesn't disrespect the belts.
It's like, it goes to having, like, a pissing contest publicly, though. It was like North Korea going to war with, like, Nazi Germany. You just like, what do I root for here?
It's like, it would very much be like the NBA All-Star Game of jerks.
With Adam Carolla thrown in there.
Listen, guys, women are not funny. That's
chicks
my Adam Carolla.
Funny.
Yeah,
that's what it is. These chicks aren't funny. Now, here's the show where I catch contractors, mostly Mexican, of course.
What if Corolla did a podcast with Vince Russo? I just blew your mind.
You did? That's just like, I don't even think it's fair to like propose such a thing as a fantasy, because now like nothing that happens in real life will ever live up to that.
No, I imagine.
I feel like it should be illegal. It should be illegal to come up with a scenario like that, just because like nothing that ever happens in my life. Like I'll now when I have a child, I'll be like, well, it's no Vince Russo Adam Carolla podcast. I'll say that much.
Like, I'm imagining it's just like them bringing naked women into a room and Vince being like, okay, you're a bitch. And then Carolla's like, and you're not funny. Get out of here.
Yeah. You're not funny. You're not funny. And you'll never draw a die.
goodness. But hey, at least we have Vince Russo hopping on Skype for charity and playing.
And CCing Mike, what's his name, from PWI Insider instead of Mike Tenay. Whoops. I don't get technology. It autofilled. I assumed it was going to Tenay.
Wait, there's somebody else named Mike on the internet? No way. I get no respect.
What? I thought it was some Polish name. I thought only he had it.
Oh, goodness. I listened to part of the deal, like, because he really did like hop on Skype for charity and fantasy book, like using that EWR game. And it's the craziest shit, because like they invite him into a conference call and he has no idea what's going on. Like, his first question is, where are you all coming from? I can't see you. Like, and he's freaking.
He was like a time traveling caveman. Like caveman. He's like unfrozen caveman lawyer. Like, listen, your cars and airplanes confuse and frighten me.
Like, and one of the guys is from Australia, and you've never heard somebody more impressed in your life.
Wow.
Like, whoa.
People from around the world.
Like, how are you guys sending the money? Well, we have a website, Vince, and they just click a button. Whoa! Hold on. I want to see this thing. How can I see this thing? Go on to this website. Oh, well, I don't know how to get on that website. You go on any of your browsers. What's a browser? Like, he tried to get on this website on Skype.
Listen, you know what Vince Russo is? He is Bizarro Joey Lawrence. You know how, like, Joey from Blossom was like at first really stupid and never understood anything, and then they like had that one episode where they found out he was an idiot savant and that he was actually a genius, and just like he was never able to prove it, and then like all of a sudden he became really thoughtful and like entirely different person. Vince Russo was like the reverse of that, where like he was the most brilliant mind and the architect of the Attitude Era, according to him, and now he's just like become one of those weirdos that video blogs on YouTube about vaping.
it's like a really, really long sexist Flowers for Algernon.
You gotta till them. You gotta make your garden grow. Vince. Vinny. Boss Daddy.
Oh my goodness. That's really Vince is Russo, like you said, it's the gift that keeps on giving. Like, you never know what he's gonna do next.
And can I just say too, I know this is like my first WrestleFolk since quitting WWE, and it's like I've talked more about Vince Russo than anything else. I've never met the man. I never will meet the man. I just wonderful people and experiences I had. Vince Russo is still like at the top of my like interest level in professional wrestling, just because like he's like, you couldn't write someone like him. Like, he makes me envious. And, like, you know how you see real-world situations and sometimes with the writer, you'll be like, man, if I had thought of that as, like, the plot of a book or whatever, like, that's Vince Russo 24/7.
Yeah. No, and he always has something to say that elicits an emotional response that he's not trying to. Like, for instance, like, he and his son are writing a sitcom called Bell of the Ring. And it's and I quote, it's like 30 Rock, but for wrestling, but a broad's running it.
Bell of the Ring.
Yes. There's a pun.
So it's like B-E-L-L-E-I-F-M, right?
Yeah.
Does he know why the extra L and E is there?
I don't think he knows why.
Has anybody clued him in? Has anybody told him yet?
I don't think he knows like any of the words or in that order. Like, I think his son wrote the title. And then he's like, what if the woman, she like walks up to the guy, she's like, you're going to lose tonight and you're going to win. And then she grabs her titties and walks away. What if?
What if? Wait, it's B-E-L-L. Oh, like a southern bell. That's Vince Russo 6 episodes in.
But what if for like an episode, she's a bell? Like she just rings and shit. He's so good at being, and people pay him $3 a month to type words and do podcasts.
You know, there's like 10 people who do. You know that number's probably in like the dozens, if that.
But if it's more than one, it's, yeah. Like, if it's not,
it's
just
more than one, it's more than one less than 50, I'm sure.
Yeah. Like, I can't imagine it just being like one real huge cheapskate who's like spreading it with like 50 people. And I'm not saying mm-hmm. that's me, because trust me, I'd be the one that was bootlegging the stuff off of the guy, not the one giving the product out. As because I'm cheap like that. So I'll take advantage of my friends for anything, as you can see by the fact that you're on my podcast 3 weeks after losing your job.
Yeah.
I'm the worst. I really am.
So
serious talk, and then I'm sure we'll get back to Vince Russo, because that's how it always happens.
Next time we'll get back to Vince Russo. We'll talk more Russoisms.
Yeah, it's
sure.
Having been inside the infrastructure of the biggest company in the industry, there are things on the horizon. You know, if TNA survives all this scuttlebutt that's going on, or you know, if Jeff Jarrett's company is actually a real thing and not just a really sweet EWR eFed, or if or if whatever the hell is going on with AAA happens, is there any insight into what the heck they could be doing that maybe other companies aren't looking out for in terms of competing with the big, big empire?
Honestly, and this is TNA's big failing, it's real simple, and it's not even going to be talking inside school or outside of school or anything, or like shop talk. And it's something even a lot of fans will tell you, just provide an alternative to what's out there. Stop trying to ape. The thing that blew my mind about TNA is when I was there and we had WrestleMania, and then like, you know, almost right after that, they did a compressed version of the same exact angle with Eric Young. What? Why would you do that? Like, that just makes you look bush league. And copying anything that another company does and doing it on what will invariably be a smaller scale, just because there's no way you're just realistically, you're not as big as the big dog in the yard, which is WWE. It's embarrassing, and it's embarrassing for fans. It's embarrassing for the company. And it just makes you look like, invariably, a low-rent version of what WWE has to offer. And this isn't a statement on what WWE does or doesn't do right in terms of, the promotion and, who they choose to push and who they choose to push reluctantly or anything like that. It's just, when somebody's got a market cornered and they're not going anywhere, you got to provide something different to try to get a different type of fan base in there. Otherwise, all that you're going to get is the same number of people, the same dwindling fan base that will watch any wrestling product no matter what. And with the internet, that's shrinking. Because it's people who have a thirst for wrestling and they need to see it at any given moment or any given time, those are the only people who are watching Impact for the most part. And that number is going down, bit by bit. And the reason for that is because more and more people have access to high-speed internet, they have access to YouTube. And listen, if they want to watch any wrestling at all, and this isn't just WWE Network speak, but I mean just by searching Google, it's at their fingertips. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there and there's a lot of stuff to fulfill your, oh, okay, I can just watch this clip of an old wrestling match that nobody owns the rights to. And you know, you just providing a lower-end version of WWE, it's like, like, this doesn't interest me. Like, I just saw this, like, last week on WWE. If I want to see something different, I can go anywhere else. You're not just competing with WWE for attention span. You're competing with everything. And so you have to provide something that's unique and that's intriguing. The only way to do that is to not mimic and ape what another company is already doing. The one saving grace of TNA, in my opinion, was how they shoot their backstages. Like, I think that's really different and cool, and it's something that separates them. But then as soon as that bell rings, or as soon as anything else happens, it's just, it's them trying to be something that they can never be. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know how, like, people on the internet, they always share a link to, or a video to, like, another country, their version of, like, a mainstream movie, or, like, a poor knockoff of it, and then laughing at it and being like, ha-ha, can you believe they do that? That's basically what you become when you're a wrestling promotion and you just try to do the same exact angles that had already been done, especially ones that have been done, like, weeks before. You look like basically something that will show up on Riff Tracks, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, going back to them copying, it wasn't just the Eric Young thing. I mean, within 2 weeks, they pretty much had Black Evolution. And, you know, the lead heel group in the company was the Authority, but if Triple H was, like, 5 feet tall and British. And...
yeah, and exactly. And yeah, and Dixie was, like, a poor woman Stephanie. It's like, the list goes on and on. I mean, I just used the Eric Young example because that was the most, like, gregarious one, of where it's just like, holy crap, like, this was like WrestleMania just happened for the first time ever, over a million people saw it, or whatever the statistic is, and like, you're doing it beat for beat over the course of 4 or 5 weeks, like a more scaled, like, that's like the most embarrassing, shameless thing I saw of them, you know. And that's why I think, like, I do have some hope that, like, Global Force is actually a thing, that, like, I hope that they try to do something wildly different and not try to do something that just was done before. And I realize it's easier said than done, but it can be as simple as just doing a straightforward, like, old school territorial wrestling show type thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there's a way to do that in 2014, but I think there's the big divide between people who just want to, hey, let's just straight up do Memphis in 2014 and let's be the big bad wolf show with all the bells and whistles and none of the substance. You know, I think there's a way to do that type of old style territorial show in 2014, but modernize it. Like, do if you need backstages, do them kind of like maybe how TNA's doing them. Or one thing I do like, because I watched a couple of weeks ago, I watched one full episode of Impact. Bobby Lashley, the way they're handling him right now, they're not like, hey, everybody, he's an MMA fighter, he's legit. But the way they're building up, he wrestles once a month, he beats someone clean, he has a hype man that's like, hey, he's the baddest dude alive, and they show him killing it in the gym. And I guess it's MVP who's rapping the music, so they have rights to actual rap songs. But it's like, it's a rap song that kind of sounds like something you hear on the radio, and not just, adrenaline rush, haha. But it seems current. You know, you can do something like that. It doesn't have to be Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which I love Smoky Mountain Wrestling. But if you put that on TV in 2014, I don't even think you can get a public access. Like, like the Chris Gethard show looks a million times better than Smoky Mountain Wrestling, for instance.
Yeah,
just throwing that out.
Smoky Mountain could Smoky Mountain was the kind of show that still worked to everyone's surprise in like 92, 93. Not like it's a timeless formula. You know what I mean? It was just that sort of show could last longer than people thought. And, you know, and I'm not saying like, ain't the front. And when I say territorial show, like, you know, I'm just saying, just try anything that's different from what's being done already. Otherwise, like, try not to be, because you're barely going to be compared to them. But don't do stuff to actively invite that comparison, is all I'm saying. And that's not even like, I'm not even, and I want to put this out there too, is I'm not trying to put out there, like, my expert opinion, because what the hell do I know? I only wrote there for like 9 months. I'm just saying that even just as a fan and just as like an observer, somebody who works in television or whatever, it's like the moment you try to just like be like, oh, let's do a, you know, this type of show, but it's this, like the moment you start doing that, you're already like limiting the size of your audience. So you got to do everything that you can to really separate yourself from the competition without drawing that comparison. That's all I'm saying.
And also, I do also want to throw this out. I think you'd agree, but I'm hoping you'd agree. Don't try to do fake MMA either. That's you already have the real stuff.
No. Yeah, that's a formula for disaster. Because again, that's the sort of thing of like, it's not it's not as stupid as the worksheet stuff that they used to do in like the late 90s, early 2000s. But like, it does, you know, destroy that suspension of disbelief that you have. Like, the way that WWE treats Brock is brilliant, because it's not like they put him in there and it's like, oh, he's dangerous because he's from the real world of MMA. They treat him as he's dangerous because he's Brock Lesnar, and he also has this MMA background. They use it as, like, kind of a just one of many things that he has in his tool chest in his background that makes him even more of a monster. Yeah, the whole, like, that's the thing, too, is that people don't realize now, we have a very different culture from Japan. But one of the things that almost single-handedly killed the pro wrestling industry was them booking MMA guys in pro wrestling and always putting the MMA guys over and making it a point to say, oh, but the MMA stuff is real and pro wrestling is. That completely killed it. Now, we have a bit of a different culture, but you can absolutely run into the same problem the moment you start doing that. Of like, okay, well, you're going to bring in MMA guys and you're going to tell me basically that they're tougher and they're better than these guys that these characters that are trying to get invested in. I'm going to believe you, and then all you're going to be left with is guys that you just told me I can't get invested.
Yeah, and with Brock, there it's a multifaceted thing. First off, he's the one guy. They're not bringing in 10 guys from MMA. Second off, you look at him. He looks like the baddest human being on the planet. It's not like they're bringing in...
They're not bringing in like Kenny Florian to German suplex John Cena. Yeah,
exactly. It's not. Yeah, it's not Kenny Florian and Joe Stevenson coming in to beat up everybody. You know, it's the arguably the baddest man on the planet. Who, I mean, at one point at least he was the baddest man on the planet, and you could argue. I mean, he's got the best pitch man in the world right next to him, convincing the world. Hey, if it wasn't for this disease, he still would be. And now he's good again, and he is. You know, so wrestling has the real baddest man on the planet. What does MMA have? And it's, but also, I don't think I'm speaking outside of school by saying this. Someday, Brock Lesnar will probably lose that title to a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
And when he does, hey, all's right in the world in terms of the whole, hey, that's the real guy. No, all the top guys are real guys at that point. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's theory, everybody. It's theory. It's this is the ex-writer talk everybody's coming for. Your damn expert opinion. All you have to do is do a Vince McMahon voice and everyone's happy.
Oh well, notwithstanding.
I love if you could just leave it at that and forever, that's your Vince McMahon. It's just the words notwithstanding.
That's been my Vince McMahon since I was 14 years old.
Yeah. I would love if he just like walked around the offices like reading old copy from like pay-per-view intros. Hercules! Yeah. Paul Roma! Like, he points
at... All right!
Like he has to choose between, like new... I don't know. Two things in the office he would choose between. He points that at one and yells, Shay Douglas!
Yep.
So, yeah, that's...
By the way, I will neither confirm nor deny that there are posters of Shay Douglas in Titan Tower. Just kidding, there's not.
Yeah.
not a one.
Now, this is something.
And that comes by the way, I'm not ripping on Shane Douglas, but I was a huge Shane Douglas DCW fan. So.
Yeah, I do think he gets a rough time because of the past, like, 10 years.
I don't know. I don't get why people, oh, he hung around too. I think every wrestler, fucking, clearly some different from any other professional wrestler in the history of ever, He's like, oh, he hung on too long. Yeah. Terry Funk, you know, like, I don't know. I never had any interaction with the guy, so I can't speak or anything on him. It's like, I loved his ECW run. I don't know if it holds up. I haven't watched ECW in years, but God damn, he was great in that role.
I do have another, like, nerdy, like, I believe you can answer this question. So I think you were the person who told me this story. True or false, when you're on hold at Titan Tower, the hold music is a Muzak version of Somebody Call My Mama.
It was not the Muzak version of it. It was the literal, just the Somebody Call My Mama that was playing. Now, at the time, and I think what it is like, I think they just cycle through a few, like, wrestling themes and songs. Like, at the time, like, the Funkadactyls and Brodus and Tensai were still, like, an act. So, like, it sort of made sense. It was funny. It was, like, you know, very professional. It's like, you know, calling and talking with the HR person. It's my first contact with them. And they put me on hold. Then I hear, somebody call my mom. It's very, very surreal.
See, it would be great if they just never updated it. And you call, okay, we'll put you on hold one moment. And it's, like, Maven's song.
It'd be cool. It'd be even cool if it was like Coco Beware, like the bird song, Birdman, whatever that song is called.
I thought you were gonna say it'd be cool if Maven answered the phone. Like, they just, like, now that everything, like, they're trying to take care of the older wrestlers, they just employ them at the tower. Like, Maven's answering the phone, and I don't know. Rob Conway is, you know, is spotting you at the gym, and there's a juice bar somewhere where Buddy Rose's kids are hanging out, making a living.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, I don't know, I wasn't afraid I would ask you, like, oh man, what's plans for so-and-so, but more like super nerdy, geeky, like, questions that would get me laughed out of, like, a job interview. Like, yeah. I want to ask you all, like, all those type of questions. Like, you know, when you walked in the door, did they play a video with your face on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, with, like, Kevin Marshall with a logo.
Which they did. We all got it. Okay. We all got our own Titantron. That is true. Next question.
Yeah. So was there at least, can you answer if there's, like, a button that you step on and it comes up?
And it comes up. What it is, it's a microchip. That's inserted just beneath the skin. So that anytime you, like, as soon as you enter Gorilla, it's like a motion activated thing. It knows you're coming out through the ring, so then your music automatically plays.
Oh, I thought the microchip thing had to do with, like, healthcare. Not necessarily WWE's, just in general.
Oh, well, that's the Obama one. And that's not coming till next year. First they have to close down the FEMA camps, because that's just the temporary set up, because the more permanent solution is going to be the FEMA camps. It's going to be the microchips. They just have to, you know, they haven't perfected the technology like WWE has, because, you know, it's Obama. Come on. What a dope. What a big dum-dum.
You realize I'm going to send this to Dave Meltzer Sunday night with, like, hey, I interviewed an ex-writer. Here he is talking about microchips.
Because, that's my best Dave impersonation.
Yeah, you know.
I don't remember. That was always my favorite. Like, I unsubscribed to The Observer. Wanted to save money, just because I was like, at one point I was like, I just wanted to save some money, but also, like, I didn't listen to it just because, like, I knew it would drive me crazy. Like, I basically just imagine having, like, going out of your way to read the comments. You know, it's like, it's one of those things. Not to that extent, because I think, you know, I was always, like, a big, like, fan of, like, Meltzer's style of journalism and stuff, even though, you know, whatever. But, like, I unsubscribed from them, but my favorite thing was always, like, when they would go to the mailbag, and clearly they didn't go through the questions, because they would be like, first question, when did blah, blah, blah? I don't know. Don't remember. All right, next question. Like, well, Dave, do you want to, like, look this stuff up before you go to it? No? Okay. All right.
No, but yeah, he's been doing, like, all mailbag episodes with my pal Mike Supervivi lately.
Oh, yeah. And, like, it's just him reading it. Yeah, he's been doing those for a while, because he was doing those before I started there.
Yeah, but, like, it's just him reading. And yeah. he's clearly got them printed off.
Yeah.
A stack of papers, flipping yeah. them one by one. And yeah. like you said, he'll be like, I don't know about this thing from like 2003.
Yeah.
But like I sent in like this super nerdy question about like the concept of bicycle tapes, where they would like in the territories, you would like just send out one tape and then the stations would mail them to each other.
Yeah.
So you'd like be one, if you were, let's say I'm in St. Louis tonight and then tomorrow I'm in Kansas City, but they're a week behind, so on and so forth. Boom, 20-minute answer off the top of his head.
Yeah, that, I mean that's what I was trying to get at. Like that's the sort of stuff that he's like great for. Like he's got such like a like borderline Asperger-y knowledge of pro wrestling. He's like pro wrestling Rain Man, and I mean that as like the highest compliment. Like he just as a historian is just like amazing, and it's great because nobody else is chronicling it. You know what I mean? I think pro wrestling needs Dave Meltzer. Because it's just somebody like when we lose Dave, like, what are we going to have? Like, Brian, I mean, Alvarez doesn't have that historical knowledge. He always defers to Dave, you know?
Yeah, replacing Dave with Brian would be like replacing, like, Dan Rather with Dr. Demento.
Yeah, like Brian's going to be like, I don't know, but 9/11 was just my job. Actually, it's not. Brian Alvarez is not a truther, as far as I know, but he loves it. I don't even think he believes in the conspiracy theory stuff and the supernatural stuff. I think he's just like, and I know a lot of people like that. I get the impression that he's just like a fan of it, right? Like he just like that stuff, like, you know, Coast to Coast with Art Bell. Just like, it was just fast, even as a skeptic, it was fascinating to listen to, like theater.
Yeah, I've never listened to one of Brian's Bigfoot heebie-jeebie shows.
Yeah.
No,
I never have either, but it's mostly because it's like, I didn't know if he actually believed in it or not, and like, just listening to a skeptic talk about Bigfoot would be weird, I don't know. I just never, like, you know, as an adult, I've just never had interest in things that aren't real, that people treat like they're real. And I know that sounds weird coming from a former writer of professional wrestling, and I'm sure you're, like, waiting to pounce on that to point that out, but, you know.
You're making me sound like... I'm not going to go there. That was mean. I was thinking of something very, very awful.
You know what? No,
you said pounce.
No, you know what? You're the dirt sheets. That's what you are.
I am. Oh my goodness. I have turned into the dirt sheets.
You have.
I am like less charming Wade Keller at this point. That's
pretty awful.
it's the worst.
You're a terrible human. It's not him that is charming at all. It's somebody else is doing it, but that works at that time. But yeah,
we're at about the hour point. Since and you'll be back on because I'll talk you into it.
Sometime. Yeah. And that's something we should say to listeners too, guys. We're getting the band back together once a month.
Yes,
me and Leonard Carson. One day, that's going to be exciting, is when you get to this side of the country fully, and in this city, and you can get the three of us, me, you, and Lenny, in a room together, shooting. Oh boy.
Oh man, oh my, the Vince Russo impressions, oh my goodness.
Oh my god.
I think.
We're going to sit around in an apartment.
That's the first life.
At 60 minutes of the three of us just doing our Vince Russo. And it's like, and we're going to call it Russo on Russo with Russo.
I think that's the first live podcast. Is
yeah.
just a competition, a Russo competition. And then the big swerve at the end, it's like the big swerve at the end, the curtain opens and Vince Russo walks out. And we all throw our dollars at him.
Well, I don't know about you, but you can throw your money at him. I'm just going to burn it in front of him because that's he's more used to seeing that happen.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
But what I was getting at is, I mean, you'll be back on again. It's not like you said you're done with wrestling, but you'll be back on again.
I'm done with wrestling, but still have the memories, and I'm not going to leave them alone.
You better not, which you can find once a month on the Russell Folks Podcast Network with comedian Eric Barnes.
That's right.
Thank you for the opening.
Of course.
But no, but just because I don't want, you know, your appearances on here to be awkward. Hey, memories of blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to express from your time at the company? Any, you know, fun anecdotes? Anyone you want to say hi to? Anyone... any 401k info you want to put out there?
Anybody I work with that's listening, while you listen to this, stop us rolling dirt sheets for info. Nobody's ever going to mention you. Nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows you exist. I sincerely doubt any of them would listen, let alone this far in. But if they did, miss you. To the rest of the ones that were in the room with me that got the notice the same day I did, people make bad calls all the time, and we were definitely one of them. Godspeed to them. And to the rest of WWE, I can only wish you the best in all of your future endeavors, because let me tell you, my future endeavors are going to be smoking.
You mean like e-cigarettes? Like
I'm going to start vaping. I'm going to start vaping.
Yeah. Like, eventually it'll be you and Vince Russo doing the YouTube videos together about vaping.
Yeah, like, we're going to review vaping mechanisms. And we're going to have our special guest, Stephen Dorff, on there. Guys, you can smoke them at restaurants. Like, no, you can't do that. You can't just...
You can smoke them at preschool.
Yes.
Just pull one out. Whatever.
Yeah. You can smoke them at the basketball game. No, you can't. Can't do... Like, the rules of society, polite society, still apply. Like, they're not like... The laws don't get thrown out the window because you vape. Keep vaping. That's my message to my former coworkers. Keep vaping.
Like, well, what if that was the rule? Is that if you were vaping, like, the laws of this country did not apply to you?
You can take your dick out on the subway.
Oh, I'm gonna. I was gonna say something awful about Ferguson, Missouri, and I'm not going to. they're all vaping.
God, don't even get me started on all that.
Just go on Twitter. Just listen to this at 11 o'clock on a Sunday, and then go on Twitter in about an hour, and you'll get everyone's opinions. Spoiler alert, we're all against it.
God, I hope it's over by then. American, I'm exhausted. I'm so distressed and exhausted.
So I was gonna lead it to the whole, hey, where can people find you? With, oh, where can people pay you money? But obviously, this vaping thing, you figured it out.
Yeah,
you're gonna be in a job in no time.
Yeah,
like, really, where can people find you or offer you money things?
They could find me at twitter.com/KevinMarshall. Also, the Kevin Marshall. That's THE Kevin Marshall with two L's. Tumblr.com. Also, I'm starting up a Kickstarter for an independent movie. It's just going to be about, I don't know, a pretty guy and a pretty girl getting together. That's what independent film is now, apparently. Daniel Radcliffe will probably be in it. I don't know. Give me money, you dum-dums, you stupids. And that's it. And if you really do want to give me money, though, like, I got a PayPal set up. Just tweet at me and let me know. Actually, that's not true. Don't give me money. I don't deserve your money.
See, what if we can make a living via just being a guest on a podcast? You know,
that'd be great. Yeah,
it's not like people do that.
That'd be great. It's like, wow, what if I can make a living at, like, masturbating once every 3 days? But yeah, that's awesome. That'd be great.
I went to school with girls who do that, so do not shame the name.
I'm not shaming that game, but I'm just saying me. Nobody wants to see me do that.
Dude, there are things on the internet for everything.
There is not a belief. Listen, I've tried this. It doesn't work.
Well, what you could do is you can give out your porn tube username to everybody so they can find you and pay you to
cam. Oh, yeah. That's how living under martial law. You can find my cam on there. I'll be on there all night smoking cigarettes and waiting for you to give me money for a show.
Nothing sexy, just cigarettes and secrets.
Just sitting there looking really exhausted and wasted on life.
Which, by the way, everyone should follow Kevin on Tumblr because he posted this amazing John Popper thing.
I don't want to
spoil an ounce of it, but it was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Me and John Popper, we're at war. John Popper and Blues Traveler. Well, not that I'm in exclusive company. Apparently, that guy literally just stays on Twitter all day and all night, like, finding mentions of himself and tweeting really horrible, despicable like sexist thing that women. It's amazing and depressing and infuriating, and you'll feel a lot of the feels, as the kids say.
Well, I remember I tweeted a joke about it was something about the hook will bring you back. It was something that was the punchline. It was like, go to the Blues Traveler hardware store, and it's like, oh, the hammers are solid, but it's the hooks that bring you back.
Yeah.
And John Popper found that. I didn't tag anybody, and he replied with, go hang yourself with the hooks.
Yeah.
So.
Like, it's just like, he's probably thinking to himself, he's like, the fact that they are, like, getting a reply from me, John Popper of Blues Traveler, I bet they're going to be like, whoa, this is going to make their day. This is going to like, they're going to, this is going to blow their minds. When in actuality, we look at it, it's like, go away, creep. you weirdo.
And it was a big deal to me until like the next week where, I'm not kidding, Fred Durst replied to one of my.
Oh my God. You're like, Your Twitter reply, your notification timelines just look like lineup for the shittiest, hey, remember the 90s CD you could ever find.
Oh, Carson Daly hosts my advertise.
Live from Times Square. Let me tell you something. I wrote for a show that occasionally filmed in that old PRL studio. It is the most depressing place on the planet. I know they still use it for some things, Viacom channels, and if there needs to be a wrecking ball brought to that place.
There was there's a Nick Lachey show that shoots there because I was homesick from work a while back, and there was like a VH1 morning live show.
Yeah.
And I watched like 10 minutes of it. And it's right. Like, yeah, this is like, Nick Lachey hosting a show in that building. It has to be like going back to your old high school 20 years later, because you're dating a sophomore.
Yeah, exactly. And you see all of the grime everywhere, and you hate yourself even more. And you then realize, hey, how come it's not peering over to the right? Oh, that's because the once fabulous view of Times Square is now wholly and completely obstructed by that gigantic sign for Bubblegum Trip Company. That's what we in the business call a shoot. That's a true story. Like, if you veer a little bit over to the right, the reason they don't use they have a very fixed location in that studio now is because the only view you really get of Times Square there is obscured by the Bubblegum Shrimp Company. And they put up a sign in their window that says, we love MTV. And I used to shoot a show, and I shot a show there for Spike and looked over and it said, we love MTV. It's like, yeah, thanks, assholes.
No, and I can attest to that, because one of my touristy things when I went to New York a few months ago was I wanted to go by the TRL studio, and I was that asshole who yelled out if Carson Daly still lives there, and he did not reply, because he's off living in some attic at like one, hosting shows at like 1:30 in the morning.
He's hosting something. Well, that got canceled.
The
NBC late night show he was doing, didn't that get canceled?
If it's a recent, because it was on like last night.
Well, like
it might have been like
no. I thought Last Call with Carson Daly got canceled.
No, the it's not a talk show anymore. He does like pre-recorded, like artsy shot. It almost looks like all the segments are shot with like his personal DSLR,
which improbably. Let's be frank. It is.
Yeah. But like, it's like him doing, it's the edgy version of late night. Like tonight's band is someone you've never heard of in a basement in Nashville. But before that, he's going to talk to Jim Norton about why you're allowed to say the N word if it's fun. Like that's all the show is. Like one night, I swear to goodness, his guest one night was like a YouTube vlogger.
Wow.
And it was, yeah. So, I think we can.
Not even one of the ones that's famous enough to get on those awful YouTube commercials.
No, it was like I did this because I'm an awful, vain human being. I went on Twitter. That person had less followers than me. I'm like, that's bullshit. Right there. I pointed at my television and said, that's bullshit. So I think I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah,
that was a year ago when I had like half as many followers. But I think we can end on that with me blowing up my own ego.
Yeah.
I think we can end there. That's a great ending.
At Not That Tom Green on Twitter.
Yes, let's plug my stuff while we're at it, since it's not like I'm on the show every week.
What else do you do, Tom? What else do you do?
I have a Full House podcast that might have. Yeah, somebody on this line might have done that podcast while he was with a certain company. And it was a lot of fun.
Barnes is listening. Hey, Eric, what's up, man? Didn't know you were listening.
Eric was in fact with Stamos Corps when he did podcast. It was real controversial.
Yeah.
We had to pretend he was working for Joey Lawrence Corps.
Yeah.
It was a gag we pulled for like half the episode. But if you do listen to that Full House podcast everywhere you look, you might be hearing a familiar voice and a reoccurring gag we're going to start doing. That's a horn. That means that you should pay attention to that.
Yeah, that means you should go check it out. Check it out on iTunes. You should leave a review for everywhere you look, as well as a review for this show. Because you know what? Doing that gets these shows on the new and notable section. That's how the show gets more listeners. That's how it gets more support. That's how it makes sure the show keeps going. So make sure you log on to iTunes, you log in, give them all your personal information, and then you just take a moment, a minute or two. And all you have to do is just click on the number of stars and say good, great, or bad. Actually, I think you can even say it's terrible. It doesn't matter. Just give us a little bit of love, and we'll be expanding onwards and upwards. Right, Tom?
I think everybody, Kevin Marshall, host to Russell, folks.
Yeah.
On the line, I think you just ruthlessly took over the show.
So I did.
Congratulations.
You never.
Congratulations. I'll send you the password.
Swerve.
That's the big swerve. Is after 64 episodes, you've been hosting the whole time.
I've been hosting the whole. You never saw. It was me all along.
WWE was just a thing we made up in like 1983.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that you would all think, oh man, Kevin left, when in fact he's been hosting this show the whole time, and I went to do some kickboxing. Yep. I am Mirko Krokop.
Yeah.
That's my big secret.
Yep.
So, I think we can go now, because I think I can literally hear the people walking away.
Alright.
Bye, listeners.
Bye.
All right, thank you, Kevin.
Bye, guys.
Honestly, while the two people are still here listening, thank you so much for doing this, Kevin. You are a treasure. You are one of the smartest, most awesome, nicest human beings ever. And onward and upward. And yeah, something sad. I tried to be really sappy here, but I'm trying to be like honest and cool. And thank you so much.
I'm off of taking compliments, so go fuck yourself, Tom.
Check out our sponsor, Top Rope Tuesday. The very best in alternative wrestling apparel has gone daily. Every day, a brand new t-shirt designed for 24 hours only for just $13.99. And even cheaper on Tuesdays. Check out TopRopeTuesday.com for more information and to get yourself a lovely shirt. If you want to sponsor us, folks, email notthattomgreen@gmail.com. We'll talk shop.